All right, Monday morning, and we are live. Good morning to you. Leanne Moles here with me.
I am indeed.
She just went into the bathroom and said, "What the hell happens in here over a weekend?"
No, it's crazy. It's the second time I've been to the loo here.
She came up. She was like,
I don't know
what to make of what's happening in the bathroom. It looks like hell in a handbasket.
I don't know what happens in there. The first time I went in, I tripped over a brutal fruit bottle.
Oh.
This time, there's no loo roll. There are empty loo roll things all over. There are bits of hand towel and tissues. There looked like blood on the hand washing, hand drying towel or
good
something.
Heavens.
I don't know if it was maybe lipstick.
Yeah.
It's like there's a war in there on weekends.
Yeah, it's because on Fridays we have a big party here in the office. Friday
My
afternoons.
Word.
Yeah,
well,
you should come for that.
I think you'll at least
understand the context.
Yeah, because then I'm happy to participate.
Oh yeah. No, there were big celebrations on Friday.
That's awesome, though.
It was busy, yeah. So anyway, besides that, I don't know, like most offices, I think on a Monday morning, you know, it takes a while. It's even like my house on a Monday morning. When I leave, I'm like, ooh, got so much to sort out when I get back.
I hope I don't die on the way home.
Yeah, because my house looks terrible. You're like, I got to sort stuff out because over a weekend, whether you do something, you have people there or not, or whether it's just a quiet, like chilled weekend, you're like, there are blankets lying around, you know, because you're slobbing around the house in tracksuits and watching TV and leaving mugs lying around and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, for me, it's just like not starting one project, thinking that's what I'm going to do, and then I don't finish.
So weekends, I mean, like Monday mornings, everywhere just looks terrible. So don't get too hard on yourself so early in the morning, you know. Add R2 for hope. That's what I always say. Wow, this is really intense. Yes, we are. We're intense as hell this morning. There's a lot of stories in the news. One or two things. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Again, City Power have said in Johannesburg they have no choice but to implement power cuts from Monday. So apparently they are going to implement load reduction. So now it's not called load shedding. They're rebranding. It's load reduction. They're going to protect the grid from total collapse. I saw they also, Eskom announced that they'd spent like millions and millions on diesel.
Okay.
Way more than they spent this time last year. I'm like, well, obviously they were trying to get to the elections without any power cuts. But that's not going to last because they will come into effect from Monday. Outages will run during peak times from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. in high density areas. Areas that will be affected include those with high usage levels that threaten to overload electricity equipment. So here we are again, everybody, in the load shedding blues.
So we still use our same app to find out. Okay, I see there. They say we've loaded the schedules into this app. Read more.
So they're not loading the load shedding schedules.
There's no load shedding. It says no upcoming load shedding, for instance.
Oh.
But these new load reduction areas will be loaded on the app. So at least I hope we still know what's going on. That's all.
Well, that's all I've got. All I have is that there is going to be load shedding at some point. That's all I know for now. But you'll probably get the update on the same app that you usually use.
Yeah.
All right. Then there've been shark attacks in Florida.
Oh, that's never good.
No. Apparently, three people on the Gulf Coast of Florida have been told to be vigilant. Well, those three weren't, but everyone else has been told to be vigilant because
they told them a bit late.
Yeah, they were attacked by sharks. Oh, guys, be vigilant. I've only got one leg. How can I be vigilant?
Yes, but you must be vigilant.
Yeah, be vigilant, for God's sake. One of them suffered significant injuries to her upper leg and one hand, while the other had minor injuries on one of her feet. And then one woman was said to have had one of her arms amputated after being bitten on Friday in Walton County, Northwest Florida. So remember this time last week we were talking about if you had to lose a finger.
Mm.
So if you had to lose an arm, obviously the one that you don't, if you're right-handed, you want your right arm.
Mm.
That would be sensible, right?
Yeah, that would be sensible. But geez, what a choice to make. I don't know if it's better to, you know, with great whites, they just swallow you.
Yeah, you almost just wish the thing had just did it properly and like eaten you from the head first, you know. Then everything would have just gone black suddenly, you're dark, you've gone.
And then you get spat up onto a beach.
You have to make difficult decisions like which arm would I prefer to be eaten off? Whew. Anyway, so authorities have been patrolling the shoreline. According to the University of Florida's International Shark Attack File, last year there were 69 unprovoked shark bites on humans and 22 provoked bites.
Oh.
So am I the only one that finds that a little weird? Who's provoking sharks?
I wonder if they classify that as when you throw chum and you're like, chum sharks.
Come on. Come and get it.
Sharky, sharky.
Yeah, you know, you're poking it with a stick. You know, there's another meme, right? That one of do something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're poking the thing with a stick. I don't know why anyone would provoke a shark. Like, that is just stupid. And yet, 22 provoked bites, 69 unprovoked bites. You know, if someone provokes you and you respond, that's because they provoked you.
Mm.
If you just are nasty and you just
like
attack
the other
people
sharks.
Unprovoked, yeah, that just shows you that sharks are just shitty.
Most sharks
they're just
are
shitty.
Nasty.
They're like, they just got a nasty attitude. They're like, "Heh, you don't deserve this, but hi, anyway." You know, the unprovoked sharks like, "I don't want to. I don't. Okay, now I'm going to have to." It's very bizarre. Okay, so that's one other thing you need to know. Who's this Michael Mosley TV presenter? I've never heard of him. Who's he?
Yeah, there's a photograph of him. You might recognize him. So he's a British TV presenter. He does a lot of medical shows. He's a doctor.
Nope.
He has been known for starting a few diet trends, something called a 5-in-2. He's actually a really kind man. So he does these reality shows where people are battling to get to a certain goal or they have a mental block about climbing a hill or something like that. And he works through that with them. And he's a very empathetic, nice guy.
Well, and empathy didn't help.
No,
empathy did not help. His body washed up on the beach.
Well, it didn't. It not on the beach. He went on a hike. He was on holiday with his wife.
This is the guy who gave other people advice on hikes?
Well, yeah, I kind of knew you'd pick up on that. But anyway, he went on a hike and he ended up taking a wrong turn. Oh. And Greece at the moment, it was about 47 degrees.
Oh, so he got hot.
Yeah, got hot and got lost. And they found his body near the beach. So, yeah, it was just, it's a little bit sad because he's a regular for a lot of people. He wrote a book called The Fast Diet, which he made up the 5-in-2 diet.
He should have been more worried about the heat.
Yeah, that's true. Where he was saying, you know, minimize your calorie intake for 2 days, eat healthily on the other five.
And stay out of the heat.
He often pushed his body to extra lengths. He would also see the effect of diets. He lived with tapeworms in his body for a while to see the effect of tapeworms.
Bet you'd rather have the tapeworms than the heat.
But and that was on the BBC documentary Infested, Living with Parasites.
Great.
So he took quite a few risks.
So he lived
in
on
his
the
life.
Edge.
Yeah. There were certain.
And you know what got him? The sun.
Yeah. There were certain diets he would try out that were very taboo.
You know, when it's your time, it's your time. Hey, whether it's a shark attack, whether it's tapeworms inside of you eating you away from the inside, or whether it's the sun, something's going to get you at some point.
Something's going to
get you. There's this brilliant book. I fail to remember exactly who it is. I'll bring it in on Wednesday. But I haven't read it in a long time. But I remember reading it when I was, I don't know, 20-something. About how human beings are just terrified of death. It's and for good reason. I mean, that's the end, right? So there's a certain amount of this that's very sensible. And maybe this is something for Dr. Hanan next week. But there's also a part of it that people are in complete denial about the fact that your life ends eventually. It's like one of the absolute certainties, right? Mm. We say it's a dead cert. You know, we've got super bets on the show. We're placing bets. Something that's a dead cert means it's absolutely going to happen. And guess what? Death is absolutely going to happen. Mm. And it's just so weird to me that, like, we're always surprised. This Michael Mosley guy, famous TV dude, maybe that's why we're more interested than the average person.
Mm.
And we had a rescue guy on the other day who actually goes out, and it was last Wednesday. He's one of a team of volunteer rescuers who go up onto mountains when people get lost during hikes and things. They volunteer for building collapses to help find survivors, like really heroic work. Mm. And something's going to get you. You know, it might be a dramatic thing like a shark, but it might also just be something like you're on a hike and you run out of water and you dehydrate and you think, I'll just lie down under these rocks for a little bit, and you just don't wake up.
Because
that's probably what happened to this guy.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Yeah.
So, all right, he's no longer around.
No.
Unfortunately, it's very sad. And he's probably on a holiday, right? If he was in Greece.
He was on a holiday.
It was a holiday. So now imagine having to deal with that if you're his family or his friends. And you're like, well, what do we do now? It kind of puts a dampener on everyone else's holiday. It's very selfish of you, Michael Mosley. So again, ladies and gentlemen, if we've learned anything, it is that you should not go on hikes or runs.
Not in 47 degree heat.
No, don't run at all. And don't hike. It's pointless. Okay?
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Or am I being very silly?
Look, no, you're not. No one should go on a hike in 47 degree
47
weather.
47 degrees. Yes, that's warm. And then this is an interesting thing too. Also in the news, adults and teens concerned about their screen time are turning in their smartphones for dumb phones.
Mm.
You know what these are?
Yes, like the old Nokias.
Yeah. So according to a study by Harvard University, using social networking sites lights up the same part of the brain that's also triggered by taking an addictive substance. We know about this. It's raised concerns that the youth are adopting terrible phone habits. So in the UK, they have estimated a quarter of children age 5 to 7 years old now have their own smartphone. I mean, if you're a parent who's giving a 5 to 7 year old a phone, you should go straight to jail. Straight to jail.
Yeah, that's not really
that
good,
is a terrible time while your brain's still soft for you to be allowing these kids to use a smartphone. It's what an awful idea. Anyway, links have shown some studies between the use of social media and negative effect on mental health, you don't say, especially in children. Some campaigners want age limits to be introduced for smartphone use. Others are choosing to swap their smartphones for much simpler devices called dumb phones. And these have no apps on them.
Yeah.
You can use them to call.
SMS.
And I think SMS, and that's it, right? Otherwise, they just don't have any functionality.
Yeah, you can maybe take a photo. My aunt's got one of them, and I've actually forgotten how to use them. Every time there's something wrong, she hands it over to me, and I'm like, I don't know how to use this phone.
Do you remember how you used to, with SMSs, you would have to use the same button
for
P-Q-R-S, right?
It's really difficult.
So I think in some ways it'll maybe develop some other skills for them, but I'm not surprised that people are turning to these dumb phones. I mean, if you, a five-year-old...
No, that shouldn't be happening, surely.
Carl wants to know, are we all going to ignore the fact that the water sommelier we had on was a smoke show on Friday? Yeah, she was very attractive.
Gorgeous.
It's the first time I've seen her. You know who we're talking about.
Yes. What's her name again? I follow her on TikTok.
Candace. She's great. And I didn't know. Listen, I was very annoyed on Friday because we had all those sound problems. So I was probably not in the best space to be like looking around at, you know, at what was hot. But she was also fascinating. I mean, she really knows her stuff.
Yeah.
So there we go. Apparently in the comments, people are saying the supermarket is the most dangerous place in the world. 98% of everything in the supermarket will kill you. That's John Bad Dog. I think he's being sarcastic, but yes. A lot of it will clog up your arteries. Bring on a heart attack.
Listen. Our supermarkets are still better than the US, though. And
what, with processed foods?
We've got more fresh stuff than
you
them.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And even the UK. I think our basic supermarkets still make you have to find ingredients and cook something. You know, you can't really always go in and buy something ready-made.
Yeah, look, the processed foods thing is fascinating. I interviewed Johan Hari, who's written this book called Magic Pill.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be playing it out probably this week. I'll let you know. Don't worry. I'll make sure we give you all the warning that you don't miss out on it. But he's written this book about Ozempic and kind of what the weight loss situation is like now for people, especially if they can afford these drugs, which actually they don't do anything inside the body other than make you feel full so that you don't want to eat anymore. So they directly affect your intake and your feeling of hunger or satiation, which is, I think, fantastic, because for many people, that's the hardest part of the process, is like, I can't say no to my stomach or my mind. You know, I need to eat now. And even if you're full, that need to eat now, or I feel like snacking now, people give into that. Yeah. So it's fascinating to hear that. And he says, obviously, you know, there is a certain amount of culpability in the market, in the food industry, for providing these ready. You could reach out in your house, grab something that's bad for you, start munching on it. Most of it's processed. It's really bad for you. There's nothing you can do about it if you don't have the willpower to say no.
Yeah, but it's also how much of this it changes down the line. You know, having a glass of wine a day used to be good for you. Now they've said it's definitely not.
Oh, yeah.
Having coffee, good for you. Now
my
they're saying it's
is,
not.
My favorite one is butter margarine.
Butter and margarine.
I mean, they've been telling us, you know, polyunsaturated fats are fine, but saturated fats are terrible. Then margarine was just basically plastic in a tub.
Mm-hmm.
Then butter's bad for you because it contains this and that and the other.
I read an article this weekend that flax is not good for you, that chia seeds are not good for you, that...
But they've been telling us to put that on everything.
Exactly, these superfoods. They're saying goji berries have these enzymes in them that are not good for you. So all those traditional superfoods, you never know what to believe, never. Now they're saying MSG is not bad for you. It's the Americans who were, because a lot of Chinese products have MSG in them. And Americans were trying to make out that MSG was bad for you, but MSG is apparently not bad for you.
Hmm.
There was an article this weekend on some processed foods aren't bad for you. So it's just, goodness me, we will never know.
A lot of inputs there.
So much.
Luando says, people have no idea that the solution to overeating, this is according to Luando, is drinking water. Test yourself to drink water the moment your brain says, I want to eat more.
Yeah, a lot of the times it's that you're actually thirsty or dehydrated, and it brings on a confused feeling of hunger.
Jeremy says, face filler demand is escalating to counter the Ozempic face. There's an Ozempic face?
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I'd heard about this before. I would have asked Johan about it.
It just means that your face has become thin and
gaunt.
And it's due to very fast weight loss. So your skin isn't able to keep up with, you know, tightening itself along with the loss, because the loss is so fast. So it's nothing, you know, it's actually like a bullying thing that people have got. As soon as someone loses weight, they're like, oh, Ozempic, and they're going to have a Ozempic face.
Would you do it?
Well, take Ozempic, 100%. And I'm actually
you're thinking
in the market for it, because I'm
cool.
Either hyperglycemic at times and now leading into insulin resistance.
Go for it.
So 100% I would. No, it's this whole bullying thing of people thinking it's the easy way out. They don't like the fact that a woman loses weight so quickly, or a man. So they're pointing out their Ozempic faces.
Let me tell you, if you're going to lose weight any way you can, I'm in favor. I'll be on your side.
And their worst Ozempic face is Sharon Osbourne. Her face is what it would look like.
No, but Sharon Osbourne's but she's had so much plastic surgery.
She's also so old. What do you think she's going to look like at that stage without fat in her face?
Sharon Osbourne has had enough plastic surgery for 200 people. So
and she'll admit it.
That's not the Ozempic. She looked like that before the Ozempic, right?
No.
Yes.
There's a huge difference in her face. She looks 1,000 years older.
Okay. So Carla says Ozempic will take away your enjoyment of food permanently.
Permanently? I don't know. You know that for some people it doesn't work at all. So you've got to remember that too. There's a percentage where it does absolutely nothing. And then there is a massive side effect, which is affecting a lot of women, where they actually feel like they're crawling out of their own skin.
Some people are saying that Kelly Osbourne looks even worse than Sharon.
Oh, dear.
I haven't seen a picture. I haven't seen Kelly for years on TV or anything.
Yeah, I saw her recently.
What's she up
to? She looks okay.
She doesn't look so terrible then.
Never.
If you
never
say so, I'll take
amazing.
Your word for it.
No, she doesn't look too bad.
Really? Okay. All right. Then one or two quick other things. So, James, I sent you the video of the Canadian Grand Prix singer. Have you got it?
I think it's loaded.
Okay, just take a look at this. This is. I don't have sound, unfortunately, but look at this. They're all standing, singing, and then there's the creature. Look.
You said a leotard. You mean like a unitard?
Well, I don't know what that is, but there's the creature. That is a creature that is indistinguishable from cave-dwelling trolls and monsters. That's singing the Canadian national anthem. None of them are even standing up. I mean, clearly they don't take their national anthem very seriously in Canada.
No, it doesn't look like it.
And they don't care if everybody in the world laughs at them doing that. That's the person they chose to do their national anthem. So all those embarrassing ones we had, including when Art Matthews sang it so badly. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
There have been 1,000 examples of like bad South African anthems. But this, I mean, the singing is very average. But look at that. Just have a look. What a mess.
Even the guy on the guitar is hilarious.
Oh, it's awful.
Like he's just learned how to play.
God, Canada's so woke. Oh, I hate it. I promise you. Like, I know that they've got, their 2 weeks of summer now. Somewhere between now and
a sliver of sun.
Yeah. So you know how cold you are when you wake up this morning in like Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban. Durban's never cold, but you know what I mean. Like that's a pleasant day in the middle of the year for Canadians.
Mm, not great.
Yeah, that's a pleasant day for them. And then they have to look at things like that, singing their anthem. What is it? What is that? And it was shaped, you know how some people, they say, are pear-shaped? It's not even pear-shaped. I do not know a thing that is that shape.
Well, it's egg-shaped, but with a belt.
No, it's not even egg-shaped.
That's all it is.
No, it's
like,
not.
It's like putting pants on Humpty Dumpty.
It's shaped like a yam, like a gourd.
A gourd vegetable.
A gourd, yeah. Look at it. Look at the shape. What's that? That's a gunt in the front there,
no,
isn't it?
No, it's
a gunt.
It's called an apron belly.
That's a gunt.
That
we
is
all
an
know
apron
what a
belly.
Gunt is. Did you see, by the way, at the Comrades Marathon, since this is why
an
we're...
An apron belly there.
No, let me tell you. So the mayor of Pietermaritzburg, or the, what do they call it? The Umsunduzi municipality.
Oh, okay.
Right, something like that. This mayor... Obviously, like, fat on tenders, right? This guy's been chowing the tenders big time. He had a big gunt that hangs right over, almost, like, it almost hits his knees.
Wow.
And he's got, like, he's tried, obviously, for the ceremony, he realized, he had to get up, right? So he's like, I have to get up and go to this stupid ceremony and hand over these awards. So you could see, like, he put on a belt for the first time, or maybe two belts. There was probably a buckle at the back as well. And... he had to go and present these awards. I just think it was so ironic. You've got like these super thin runners who have about 3% body fat. And you've got this guy who's got like 9,000% body fat. And he's handing them the medal. He's like, well done. But he's like struggling to breathe just to lift his fat arms to put the thing over people's heads.
Not a good representative to send, yeah.
And he puts this thing over and, oh, it's just revolting. And what did you call it, an apron?
Apron belly. It's a common thing, and
I prefer the word gunt.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, that's great. Anything else you want to get into?
No.
Oh, we're having a lot of fun this morning.
Well, I mean, besides the boogeyman burglar.
What's the boogeyman burglar? Wait, stop the press. Everybody, stop whatever you're doing. We've got to find out what the boogeyman burglar is. And then we'll get to our guest.
Okay.
Yes.
Why? I don't know. We say boogeyman in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
But it's spelt bogeyman, and the Americans say bogeyman.
Sure.
But anyway, the bogeyman burglar was jailed. This is a guy in the UK. So this family goes out.
What does he run up to them before he steals from them and go boogaloogaloogaloo?
it's 1,000 times worse than what you're thinking right now.
Okay.
1,000 times.
Go.
This family in the UK goes out trick-or-treating with their little kids.
But it's not Halloween. This is the first problem.
It's Halloween.
But not now. This must have been last year.
No, he's now appeared in court.
Oh, so this happened at Halloween.
He's been jailed. He's been sentenced.
You made it sound like it happened yesterday. All right, sorry.
This guy, Ahmad Hassan, right?
All right.
Enters into this family's house while they're out.
Yeah.
Family comes home and the house is ransacked. They think, well, we've obviously been burgled. They did leave the door open. Small community. No worries. Everyone you know is on the street.
Yeah.
And then one of the sons found him under his bed and came out and said, "Mom, there's a boogeyman under my bed."
I hope they shot him in the head.
Guess what? He was found wearing nothing but the child's orange underpants.
Perfectly sane. Boogaloo would have been better.
So, yeah, there were all toys strewn about, wet clothes all over, and there he was lying like a starfish in the kid's underwear. Anyway, so he's been sentenced, thank goodness. He denied everything and was found guilty in just 40 minutes.
He denied everything?
Yeah. I mean, how?
I didn't go to the house. I didn't ransack the place. I didn't lie under the child's bed. I didn't wear the child's orange underpants. Where do your denials begin? Anyway, what's his name?
Ahmed Hassan.
Yeah, okay.
He was found guilty within 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That's all it took for the jury.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Straight to jail.
He was apparently under the influence of a number of substances at the time.
Sure, of course. Most especially being insane.
So when somebody says they find a boogeyman under the bed,
there are a lot of people in Britain now that like, take the children seriously. Yeah. You know, normally don't be silly, child. You know, there are no such things as monsters.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you went to your bedroom and there was some Abdul Hassan guy lying under your bed going, "Boogity boogity boogity," in your underpants. You're like, "Mom, there's a boogeyman." And she's like, "Stop it. There's no such thing as a monster."
Exactly.
How awful. Oh, my God. All right. There we are. Sam Smith should move to Canada. His people are there, says Sanele. Very good. Silenificent says, Shambocking is missing from the boogeyman's life. That's right.
Sure.
Worse than unknown people living in the attic? No, Migs. That's still worse. You know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
I'm still
where
disturbed
people crawl
by
out
that
at night and eat your food while you're sleeping.
Yes. That is the most upsetting thing ever. Okay. And that's out of all the things I've learned this year, it's that there could be people living in your house that you don't know about that while you're asleep, they crawl out of the attic, go downstairs, eat from the fridge, and then crawl back into the attic and carry on living there. Yes.
Mm.
Oh, horrific.
Happens all over the world.
Okay. Let's bring our guest in for this morning and get to hear all about neurodiversity and neuropsychology, especially in the workplace. We're always talking about how we can be more productive.
Mm.
And we think it's very important to be productive on the show. But lots of people struggle because a lot of people also deal with mood, I'm having a bad day. People take duvet days, which are unofficial, but they also take mental health days these days, which are official.
Mm-hmm.
And in most companies, that's become standard policy now. So we're going to speak to Nisha Rogerson, who is a clinical psychologist, and we're going to talk to her a little bit about upping your game and lifting your mood, among other things. What happens in your brain when you're under stress? And hopefully by the end of this, we all learn a little bit about how we could be more effective and more productive at work. So, Nisha, nice to see you.
Hi, good morning, Garrett. Thanks
good to have you here. Yeah. Sorry to disturb you with that story about the guy under the bed with the underpants.
It sounds like a substance-induced psychosis. Yeah. Just my own. Yeah.
Okay, well, you're the psychologist.
Humble opinion.
You know what? You're the psychologist. So if you say so, I'll take your word for it. A lot of people are struggling. Especially in winter, I think it's worse because it's so hard to get out of bed. It's freezing out there and you have to put on all these layers of clothes. Some people have to travel a long way to work. Traffic is a nightmare. And then you get there and you're like cold in the office. Motivation's a big problem this time of year. But just generally, I feel like we're not the most productive society. Do you think that's unfair?
I don't think that's unfair. And I do think that the seasons definitely play a role. I mean, we have something actually called seasonal depression that we often see in the UK.
Yeah.
Because there's no sunshine, because it's cold, because it's raining. So people actually struggle with their mood and they struggle to regulate
just
it more.
Pull that mic down towards you. It looks like it's pointing up in the air.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Yeah, so you were saying seasonal depression is a real thing overseas.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, when it's darker sooner, there's less sunlight, you're getting less vitamin D.
Right.
It's harder to regulate the mood to get out of bed in the morning. So I definitely think that winter is playing a role. But in general, I think there are some forward-thinking companies in South Africa now that are trying to implement well-being in the workplace, like actually trying to make it work.
Do we have mental health days in South Africa? Is this standard procedure? Because I mentioned how I thought it was, but it might not be. A lot of companies that I know of are offering people, like, you know, if you're having a bit of a tough day, it might be because someone in your family is going through something, you've got health considerations of a physical nature or a mental health nature. You've been given some really bad news. There are all kinds of reasons why people might need a mental health day. Do we have that as a standard policy? Would you like to see it become standard policy?
It would be really, really helpful if HR could take that on. In some companies, I know that they have.
Okay.
But in others that aren't as forward-thinking, we're not quite there yet. So I think there's so much room for improvement there. There's so much room for growth. And for more understanding around what does family leave look like?
Right.
What are the rules and regulations around it? Because we also don't want people to
skive off.
Yeah. Offer the pinky and take the whole hand, right?
Uh-huh.
So we've got to be watching for that as well. Because I think it does take away from the incident where you actually do need bereavement leave or, you know. And I think there needs to be conditions there, right? Like, are you seeing a therapist to help you move through this? Is that available, you know, as part of the policy or in
sure.
terms of healthcare? Mm.
The thing is as well is that because there are still stigmas attached to things and because we feel embarrassed or perhaps that somebody would not understand if you had to say, my cat of 16 years has died and I actually can't come to work today. Mm. So you lie. Mm. You know, if you are neurodiverse and you're battling to get all your work done and you just want a day at home where there are no distractions just so that you can get some things done, you can't say that. So you make it up. Mm. You say, I've got to take my mum to the doctor.
Right, right. I think that happens more often than what you realize. And what I've seen with patients that come to see me that are neurodiverse is often we end up actually writing HR a letter where we request things like noise cancelling headphones or a quieter space, especially in creative open plan offices where, you know, a phone's ringing, someone's shouting, someone's playing music, someone's, and that's, it's really vibey and it's wonderful for neurotypical people. Mm. Like they actually gain energy from that. But somebody that is neurodiverse is easily overstimulated.
Mm. All right, I've heard this word neurodiverse being bandied around a little bit. So just give me the definition. I'm not going to rubbish it until I know what it is.
Okay.
So what does that mean when you say neurodiverse and neurotypical? Is this nonsense like cisgender and transgender where they've made the normal people have to use an unnecessary adjective, or is this a real thing, a category description? Of a number of things that people are struggling with, suffering with, that we need to understand so we can get the best out of them, as to they can have the best life possible for them as well.
Hmm. So I think we need to be very careful because it started out, the word and the term neurodiversity started out to take away from the stigma of people that were on the spectrum.
Autistic
yes,
people.
Yes, autism, higher functioning autism like Asperger's, ADHD, ADD is also considered neurodiverse. Dyslexia is actually the most common form of neurodiversity that we see. So it shouldn't be a catch-all phrase. And there is a concern that it is becoming that, right? Anyone that is slightly overstimulated And in our world, it's quite easy to get overstimulated, right? We're on smartphones 7 hours a day, that kind of thing. So it we do need to be careful that it doesn't become a catch-all phrase, and we actually negate to see what neurodiversity really is, and that there are real, real struggles that affect almost every area of their life. And it's quite intense to actually make that diagnosis. It's not even made by just one professional. It's a team, and there are a battery of tests that you have to go
through. Well, it's also an industry now, because this is a way to prescribe a ton of medication, and there are obviously pharmaceutical companies are very interested in that. And the therapy business is a huge business now, because everybody needs a team of therapists to help them through the day. I am concerned that we are, like humans have become so weak that we now need to hold their hand to do basic stuff like get up and go and do a day's work. And this is not good.
No.
I don't see a very prosperous and happy future for humanity if we need to be coddled every step of the way through life. And the tiniest inconvenience or misstep put someone in a position where they're suffering from PTSD for 3 years after the fact and can't go to work and get a sick note, you know? I mean, that's the extreme on one hand. And the other hand, it's like you can't not care at all. Right. You can't not care at all. If you've hired people and you need them to do a specific job and they're struggling with something and they really are the best person for your company and for you, you want to help them along. So it's somewhere in between those two things. But you can understand why I'd be skeptical about, oh, here's another battery of tests that comes in. Eventually you look at this person, you're like, you're too much hard work to employ. And you're meant to be doing the hard work. Instead, the hard work is you.
I hear you.
You know?
I hear you. Look, I think everything in moderation, and we need to find some balance, right? So we can't be coddling people, but we do need to be building resilience. Like, especially in the younger generations.
Right.
What we're seeing coming...
Gen Z has entered the workplace.
And it is. It's getting complicated.
So how do you build resilience? Because up to now, what we've been doing, what parents have been doing, what therapists have been doing, is they have been coddling these people. They've been telling them your feelings are all that matters. If you feel bad, then that's the truth. Stay at home if you need to. Let's hold hands and work through this together. That's not building resilience. That's building weakness. Resilience is built when you have to come up against tough things. So how do we do that?
So we need to empower. We don't need to wrap them in cotton wool.
Beatings. Should we have regular? Should we have work beating day where everybody gets together and like the boss beats you with a stick?
What a great idea, Gareth.
That'll build some resilience.
That's a lawsuit waiting to happen. So I would say no to that. Empowering people to actually use tools that work for them. So learning how to emotionally regulate is a skill that children need to learn, right? We're teaching it to adults as well, of course. But from a young age, we need to learn how to regulate our emotions. We can't learn that we can just...
How do you teach kids that? I mean, I'm not a parent, thank God, but if I were, the poor child would probably be traumatized. So how do you teach kids to emotionally regulate?
Okay, so I'll give you an example of an exercise that I do with my patients, and it is around mindfulness, which you're probably not going to love.
No, go on. But it's not about what I like.
So in terms of mindfulness, we learn that we can actually observe our feelings. We don't need to get carried away with them. We don't need to go along with them to the extent where they control us. So an example is emotions will come in waves. They'll come and they'll go and they'll crash and they'll recede. You are not the wave. You are the surfer.
Yeah, but look, I'm 46 years old and it's taken me a long time to understand that what you're saying is true.
Yeah.
And I do believe that to be a fairly accurate way of explaining how you can overcome and ride those feelings and not be of them all the time. But I'm 46 years old. There's no way you can get that into the 12-year-old's head. Can you?
So when they
What are these Jedi mind tricks that 12-year-olds have learned suddenly?
No. So when we're doing things like play therapy, for instance, we do allow the feeling, but we don't allow the feeling to overcome them to the extent that they can't regulate again. Right? So we do. We teach breathing exercises. We teach them that it's okay to feel that way, but we can move on from this. it's not the end.
So no beating.
No beating.
This isn't going the way that I'd hoped. In the workplace, what are you? You're not allowed to do any beatings there either. What can you do? Like, what can you do if someone is just an emotional basket case? And listen, we have big problems in this country. I'm not making light of this. Mm. We have people who come from very abusive backgrounds. We have people who are dealing with enormous difficulty from a resources point of view, from a support, from a trauma. Love, from a health, from all kinds of different things. How do you bring those people, how do you bring the best out of those people without, again, having to get involved in every aspect of how horrible their lives are? Mm. Because bosses, workplaces are not like proxy parents. Mm. You know, as a workplace, you also, you're not there to solve everybody's problems. You're there to get a job done.
Right.
And as much as it's about building people, and we've got these huge HR departments now in major corporations that do like wellness days and all kinds of things, that's not the business. That doesn't make the company any money. That doesn't help with the bottom line. In fact, it costs money. And because we've got this really dodgy society where people have been raised like wolves, the company has to take on the responsibility that the parents never did or that the community never did. And that doesn't seem fair to me either.
I hear what you're saying, and you're right. Our society experiences an extreme amount of trauma.
Yeah, especially in South Africa, right?
Yeah, like capital T trauma.
Yeah.
So I do think that there needs to be some kind of understanding of that in the workplace. But I don't think that we can pander to everybody's needs all the time individually. I think that that's we don't have resources for that. I don't know if any company has resources for that. And therapy is expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking care of each individual person would be extremely expensive. So in my mind, like grassroots level, there are certain things that we can do to help people learn to regulate their nervous system. And that's on them to do, right? We can provide the information. We can do some of the training. But the person has to take that on. I suppose just like coming to therapy, like if you don't show up and do what you need to do, it's not going to work. So that's the only way I really see there being any kind of real difference made, is if we're able to provide some of that basic training. Like when you're in trauma, your nervous system is dysregulated. We know this, right? Your hindbrain, your primal brain is online. That's where you're functioning from.
Right, like a reptile.
That means that your prefrontal cortex, which sits here in the front, our executive functioning, isn't working correctly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there was a guy, we showed a video earlier of a guy who's like on top of a bus in KwaZulu-Natal. He's riding on top of a moving bus. That is all reptile brain going on there. There's no executive function there. There's
I
none.
Wonder if that's even reptile brain, because reptile brain is about survival, and that sounds really dangerous. Yeah.
I think that's damaged hardware. That's what that is.
Probably.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to comment because I didn't see what was going on there, and I feel like that's dangerous.
Trust me, your assessment is fairly good.
Okay. So when we're in survival mode and we're dysregulated, we can't actually regulate our emotions. We're in a mode of constant stress and what people now call chronic stress.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That means it actually impairs our cognitive functioning.
Right.
Because when we're in that state, our nervous system is in that state, our body releases adrenaline and cortisol. That's necessary for survival, right? We're meant to go into fight, flight, or freeze when we're in an emergency situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stay in that for long enough, what we see is burnout. Mm. We see decline in cognitive functioning. Problem solving, creativity, abstract thought, it's all affected. So that's why the workforce...
That's horrific, because that's what we need from people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So if we can regulate the nervous system, and there are some really basic things that you can do to regulate your nervous system, right? We have something called the vagus nerve in our brain. If we can stimulate that, deep breathing exercises, proper exercise, good nutrition.
So you know what I loved about what you said just now, Nisha, is that it's on you, right? And I think taking personal responsibility is such a big deal in this country and all over the world, frankly. I mean, everybody has become comfortable with the idea that we can wake up in the morning and we can blame the weather, the government, our boss, our parents, our bank balance, our
genetics.
Overall health, our genetics, whatever. People are like, I will look for an external locus of responsibility for everything I possibly can. And I won't do any of the hard work myself on trying to make the best of whatever I've got, because frankly, you're alive, you're conscious, you're already a million times luckier than all the other animals and plants on Earth.
Right.
So get on with it. You've got functioning limbs, you've got a brain that seems to work most of the time. There might be some dysregulation and there might be some very, very serious complications for some people of a psychological kind, of a chemical kind, of a biological kind.
You feel better than most of the population of the world.
But you can take responsibility. And you don't need to medicate hugely. You can start off with breathing, as you said. It sounds silly to some people, but that's really important. Like if you're not giving your brain enough oxygen, everything's going to go worse. So breathing is one thing. Talking to people, and I don't mean just like mouthing off about all your problems.
No, building a support network.
And having people in your life you can rely on, right? Mm. And those could be people at work, frankly. Many people find work a pleasant escape from what kinds of things they're going through at home, and vice versa. Some people find home the pleasant escape from things they're going through at work. But hardship itself is probably a bit character building and shouldn't be disregarded completely.
I agree with you. And I think it has a lot to do with perspective as well. And I think you're only as happy as your mindset. And you have got control over that. You know, we talk about the cognitive triangle, which is thoughts, feelings, behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And when I ask someone, where do you think we're going to intervene? They always go behaviors. I'm like, okay, have you tried to recently break a behavior that you've been, you know, a pattern of behavior that you've been in for 30 years? And they're like, yeah, it's really hard. And I'm like, exactly. So don't start there. Also, have you tried to tell someone to calm down that's in a state of panic? There's your feelings,
right?
It's
like the worst thing you can tell them.
Do not do that, right? It's going to make it worse. Doesn't work. Thoughts. Thoughts is where we start.
But then you have to get them in a place where that executive function, that frontal brain is engaged.
Exactly.
And for most people, that's a very difficult thing on the day-to-day.
Because we're on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, and that survival stuff that you're talking about kicks in. I mean, look at Leanne. Her frontal brain hasn't worked for several years.
Well, it didn't. It didn't for a while. I was in a state of survival. Mm. You know, with traumatic events happening in the family and financial issues, and you do. It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm. You forget about the stuff right at the top. There's no ways you can get there.
Right.
You just want. You need to just focus on breathing, eating, sleeping. Mm. Those basic things before you can even think creatively. How do you think creatively, basically, on an empty stomach or being absolutely afraid of who's following you?
Right.
You know, you can't.
So we go back to the basics. If someone appears in my office and they're like, I'm so burnt out, I can't anymore. Like, I'm like, okay, let's slow down, go back to the basics. And then also during your day, what's quite important is people think they need a huge increase in salary and a really long holiday. Great, cool. Obviously, we'd all love that. But that's not always possible, right? What you can do for yourself during the day is small micro moments, small breaks where you're actually not on your phone, where you're not having conversations with anyone, where you're actually focused on regulating yourself again so that you can keep going for the rest of the day. Because days are intense. They're meant to be like that. Right?
Take a breather, literally. Yes. Very literally.
Smoke break without the smoke.
By the way, someone did say in the comments here, Leanne's reptile brain is the part that slams her fingers into doors. That's true.
You see, when I'm not,
That happened just the other day.
When I'm not
so
engaged.
It's not a lie. But that idea of using the coffee break, like you've just sent 10 emails, you've just had 3 meetings, your day's like been really intense, you've argued with people, you've had to be really, really vigilant because people are blaming you for things and shouting at you and all kinds of terrible things happen, and you take that break to just have a cup of coffee. And then what do? You go on your phone and then someone's sending you a message like the kids have to be fetched, one of them is sick or something else is going on. You're like, it's too much. Just put the phone down, let the kid figure itself out, because sometimes you can't solve everybody's problems.
Right. And sometimes about boundaries now.
yeah. And then just actually enjoy your coffee and like look at the view, or get out of the building, or if you're a smoker, have a cigarette, or whatever you do to just clear your brain. Because otherwise you're going to be overwhelmed. By the time you get home, that makes you even worse for everyone that you really love. Mm-hmm. You're going to be no use to them, and grumpy and unhappy to be around, and demonstrative and all of that stuff. It sounds to me like we don't create terrific environments for people, either at work or the in-between stuff. Sitting in traffic makes a lot of people tense. So you have to create those moments for yourself. When do you see people breaking through and having an aha moment and going, okay, I can actually handle all of this. I can handle almost anything that gets thrown at me now. How do people get to that level?
Sure. It's a tough answer because I think there's so many different examples of that. But one of the first things that come to mind is when they've managed to build a proper support network. So I think we can almost cope with anything in our day if we have someone, or a network at least, that we can rely on, lean on, talk to, that we don't feel alone in it. And like you said, it can be a colleague, it can be someone at home, it can be a friend. But what I often see when people really break and when they really struggle to put things back together is when they feel isolated within the trauma or the stress or the financial issues or whatever is going on for them. When people really struggle is when they feel alone in that. And if we can try and lean, because often people go, oh no, but I am alone in this, there's no one I can really talk to, there's no one. And as soon as I start asking other questions, like, okay, but when last did you feel like this, and who did you speak to, and how did that feel? And then we start to build that network again. And people feel very isolated in this world nowadays.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The way that society's set up, the way that work life is set up.
And technology, it gives you the illusion of being connected, but you're not really.
No.
I mean, a lot of people are on their phones the whole time. They're talking to people, having conversations, but they're not really engaging because those people aren't in their physical world.
No, and it's an energy, give and take.
It's like it's a really bad substitute.
Mm. It's like something I saw yesterday when someone says to you, how are you? And you say, well, for the purposes of this conversation, I'm fine, so let's move on.
When someone says that, I go, thank God.
Because you're never just fine.
Yeah, but I mean, again, at work, is it really your job to be to be weighing everyone else down with your personal problems?
Yeah, that's
You're literally paid to be there, so shut up.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes there's a feeling of gaining insight into yourself and becoming and feeling professional. So for instance, on Thursday last week, I received a personal call that was very difficult to hear, one that makes you weak at the knees. And I had to take myself away and have a cry, regulate my emotions, tell myself that I could only think about this to a certain extent and I would continue the feelings when I got home. And there's a good feeling in that somehow, that you manage to go back into the office and do your job and then go home. It's not always about just breaking down and saying, okay, everybody, I've just received this call.
Yeah.
And it's really horrible. Let me tell you what happened. Sometimes it's a good feeling to just do your work, be professional and deal with it when you can and rely on that network when you get home.
Mm. And that's called resilience.
Resilience.
What you've just there described.
And by the way, for anybody who's worried, the call was about her itchy nipples. Yeah. That's the reason.
There is no cure.
That was the hard personal call.
Hard news. Made me weak at the knees.
You can see I take these things hugely seriously.
I see this.
I'm very good at this therapy stuff.
I'm trying my best not to laugh out loud. But
have you ever had a psychopath like me in your rooms before? Anyway, no. Billa says, my teenage son is non-verbal autistic, will never be employable. We have no choice but to tough it out and hash out an independent survival plan for him. We don't expect society to do a parent's job. I mean, that's really tough. Really, really tough because, again, nobody asks for this. Nobody, builds this in as part of their plan. Mm. And now, I mean, I've got a friend who's he and his wife are tremendous people. They would never have done anything to deserve, if that's even a thing, the situation that they've got, where their eldest is quite severely autistic. So he struggles with communication. It's hard for him to socialize. It's hard for him to explain what he's going through, what he's feeling, what he's actually understanding about the world. Mm. And they have to be able to change things around, be flexible. At the drop of a hat, things could be very different today to the way they were yesterday. And that's got to be very, very difficult for someone like Billa too. Mm.
100%.
That's that neurodiversity you were talking about.
Right. And I think that this is where it becomes important to go, this is a real thing. There are people that have real struggles. And it doesn't just affect the person with the diagnosis. It affects the whole family, right? The whole system has to support, has to get, you know, psychoeducation around how to manage meltdowns, how to help the person that's struggling regulate. So we call that stimming, right? When they rock or when they play with a therapy dough, or there are a lot of things that can help, but the whole system has to get involved. And I think that we take away from that understanding when we go, oh, everyone's neurodiverse.
Right? Yeah,
Because the world that we're in is overstimulating at the moment, and anyone can get overstimulated and feel...
Most of us are, as you said, thanks to things like the phone. Yeah. I mean, Cook says, I removed Facebook and Instagram from my phone in December and made Sunday a no tech day. I can't tell you the difference it's made in my life. That's amazing.
Well done.
Rian says, surround yourself with good people all the time. Mm. And that goes to what you were saying about not being alone and having to deal with stuff on your own. Mm. Carl, however, says, when I ask someone how they are, I almost never actually care. It's just a box-ticking exercise. So you get all kinds. You get all kinds. I think it's great that you're doing this work. I think it's amazing that there are ways that we have found to be better at building a happier workplace. Mm. And we just scratched the surface on that front, because you were going to tell us about cultivating a supportive and inclusive workplace culture, what kinds of things you can do in the office to make it better for people who are going through all of these things, offering perks and benefits. I mean, do you want to quickly touch on any of those? I don't want to waste having you here by not going into it.
So I'm going to tell you this. ChatGPT can give you that list, right? Which is cool. But recently, I've had an experience where I have a friend that works in a company. I'm not going to name the company, but it's pretty corporate. And I asked them, you know, what...
Don't be mean to Sunlum, I mean.
What makes working there so good? Because it seems like all the staff are happy. And that's incredibly rare, I think.
Threat of punishment.
Right? No.
No?
No.
Oh.
So... it's interesting. They have sort of an open plan office space, but they're...
trap door with a monster underneath.
Their MD and CEO sit amongst them.
Mm. Oh.
So I found this really interesting. So I asked, what difference does that make? No, we get to ask them questions. Mm. We get to observe them. We get to watch them. We have open communication around how do we get to the next level, what kinds of things should we be doing so that we can increase the salary? Mm. What kinds of... And that brought about this feeling of collaboration, of community, of culture, of happiness, this inclusivity that we talk about.
You feel seen in that moment.
They don't sit in their ivory tower.
They can see your struggles.
Yeah, and they don't sit in their ivory tower and hand down instructions. They're actually a part of making things work. And the little guy gets to watch and observe and learn so much in that. And I found that was a really interesting concept. Huh. And at the end of the day, on a Friday, there's a little bar in the office space. And, I mean, we all know that the pool table and coffee machine is great. And the MDs will sit with them.
Leanne doesn't even care what industry it's in. It could be in selling... rubber boots. She's like, I'm in. Right. Where's this place? It has a bar in the office. I'm down.
And
that's
the MD
cool.
will sit with them and have a beer at the end of the work week and go, you know, what did we do good this week? What worked? What didn't work? They're quite blunt and open. And it creates this culture of no one's walking on eggshells or misunderstanding, you know, what the expectations are. Your MD sitting right there watching you going, don't do that. Do this. Or, you know, like, look what I've done. Let's try and get you to do that too. I found that incredibly interesting in terms of a setup.
Okay.
Because corporate usually
has these... Not so hierarchical.
Yeah, corporate, you usually see these, you know, this hierarchy that when you're in the bottom, you have no idea how you're going to get to the top. There's zero communication around that. There's no way you're even going to have a conversation with your MD, actually. You have to go through HR. And HR don't really, you know, even understand what's going on.
Don't get me started on HR. isn't HR just, that's the department that looks after the company, not you?
I feel like I'm not going to touch this one.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's a whole other debate,
right?
Yeah, I feel like this one's the one I'm going to walk a wide circle around.
Okay, you're allowed. Okay, I like this. So I think that's probably just scratching the surface, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah,
Nisha Rogerson, it's a great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming to talk to us and sharing some wisdom with us, so that you know, we can hopefully make people happier and more productive at work. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have a job in this country, right? Because there are so many people who don't even have that. So there's another reason to be grateful. Even if your job's shitty and your boss is shitty, it's like you've at least got a job. So make the most of it. This is better than being at home, being with nothing to do, no purpose. That would be the worst possible outcome, you know? So thank you. Very good to have you here. Leanne, try not to slam your hand in the doors today.
I almost did on the way out to the bar where I'm going on Friday, where my new job is.
Very exciting. And we will see you on Wednesday at 6 a.m. bright and early. Have an awesome Monday. Be warm. Bye.